It's your boy JC, and welcome to the Dream 10X podcast. This is episode 75.
And I'm Dr. Capel.
Dr. Capel. You know, I was thinking I wish I had a doctorate in something so we could be like the Dr. Capels. Or Doctors Capel or something like that, but I'm just a lowly regular guy.
Doctor and Mister.
Yeah. So this week we're talking about the Bruce Chenier book, A Hacker's Mind. How the powerful bend society's rules and how to bend them back. And I have to admit, so I'm trying to read through 52 books in 52 weeks, and the goal really was to read through the books that I already had, just because I don't like buying books and just putting them on the shelf. But this is a new purchase. I just bought this this past week, and I've been wanting to read this for a long time. And since I'm kind of in the groove of reading, I wanted to go ahead and read this book. So Bruce Chenier is a security researcher. He lives up in Massachusetts. He teaches at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. And I've been following his email newsletter for a number of years, trying to improve my knowledge and awareness of security vulnerabilities. So in his I think it's a monthly newsletter or something like that, he emails out and he talks about a bunch of security vulnerabilities that he's researching or that he becomes aware of. And it's very interesting. Email, and it's a good way to stay abreast of what all is going in the computer security world out there. And so that's how I found out about him. That's why I started looking at the books that he had written. And, hacking is something I'm kind of interested in from a number of different angles. So I wanted to get his take on what it means to hack and why it's important from his perspective. And so let's get into it. So the top takeaways I got from this are, number one, his definition of what hacking is. So he starts off the book with that, and he says he defines hack as a clever, unintended exploitation of a system that subverts the rules or norms of the system at the expense of someone else affected by the system. The second definition is something that a system allows but which is unintended and unanticipated by its designers. Okay, so basically, when you think of a hack, what kind of systems do you think of?
I think of my mom when she looked, or she used to read these books called Irma Bombeck, and Irma Bombeck had all kinds of hacks for house cleaning. So like tips for house cleaning, like using vinegar in a certain way so you don't have to go to the store and get Windex if you're out, or different ways to like substitute. So that's what I think of, because I grew up listening
to that. They were actually called hacks?
They're actually called hacks. Yep.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. Early on in my career, hacking was a creative process in the computer field.
Interesting.
When you hacked something together, it was kind of a creative, constructive, messy, informal process of creating something new. So you were hacking something. You were not necessarily following normal computer science norms or whatever. You were kind of... It was good for me to be a hacker because I wasn't formally educated in computer science.
Yeah.
So I was just exploring an informal creative process of doing things. And so I was just hacking, just flailing, just playing around, coming up with something. But then somehow along the way, it became a definition for breaking into computer systems and making computer systems do things that they weren't necessarily intended to do.
Which is still that element of play, because you're playing and trying to navigate, like a game, navigating the system. So yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, but I think ultimately the term hacking became more associated, had a more negative connotation associated with it.
Unfortunately, yeah.
For the most part.
Yep.
That to me was interesting. It's no longer, it still can be a creative process and based on curiosity and how to make systems do things that they weren't necessarily intended to do and get around the rules of a system. So yeah, so the second takeaway from the book is his definition of what a system is, because that's really what, when you're hacking, you're trying to make a system do something it wasn't intended to do. So the definition of a system in this book is a complex process constrained by a set of rules or norms intended to produce one or more desired outcomes.
That's a pretty standard definition of system.
Okay.
Yeah, from an OD perspective, organizational development.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So relative to our last podcast where we talked about building systems in your business to to help automate income and maximize profit, that's, you know, building systems is a constructive process.
Yeah.
And they're there to help automate things and to make things easier. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they can also be put in place to enslave.
Bureaucratic nonsense.
To increase centralize power over something.
Yeah.
So all systems aren't good. All systems aren't created equal. So that's number two, takeaway.
What?
It
was like a kid.
Okay, I'm not a great presenter. What can I say?
It was like kind of a sad way to stop. Like, systems, they're not good. It was just funny.
So they can be good, they can be bad. Moving on. All right, number three. So you typically think of hacking and systems being in the computer security realm. And so hacking, people are now that it has more of a negative connotation and it connotes somebody like breaking into your system or manipulating your computer system in some way or manipulating your information or your data in some way, it has a negative connotation. And in the realm of computer systems, how do we make those more secure so that they can't be hacked? Well, he talks about if you can design security into your system better, then you have a better chance of making your system, your computer systems, more secure. So from a software engineering perspective, when you create an application, if you can do a better job of designing that system, making it more simple, so that it is more secure against people being able to break into that system or manipulate it in some way. But that's, even designing security better into your system is almost impossible, because it's impossible for humans to think about all the possible scenarios in which a software application can be used. That reality is exacerbated by the software supply chain that's typically used to build software applications. So, you know, the libraries and the things that developers pull into an application that they're building has n number of potential vulnerabilities associated with it. The other aspect of why computer security is so hard is the aspect of time. You may not know that you have a security vulnerability when you build an application.
Yeah.
And the known tools that you use to analyze that software may not even be aware of potential security vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
But over time, people and researchers and hackers can discover those vulnerabilities, not only in your code, but in the software supply chain that went into your code. And over time, those vulnerabilities can be known. And so it's a moving target, and you have to constantly try to update and patch your software in order to keep it secure.
Interesting.
So systems are hard to keep from being hacked because over time people will discover vulnerabilities in it, and it's a constant battle between those who want to enforce the rules of the system versus those who are trying to break the rules of that system.
Interesting.
So that's a lot of fun about the world of computer security, but and systems in general.
Wow.
So the fourth takeaway from this book is that it's not just computer systems that are vulnerable to hacks. It's all systems everywhere. Even human systems can be hacked. Even our minds can be hacked. And one of the great examples I kind of loved in the book about human systems that can be hacked is gambling. So you go to Vegas, they have the one-armed bandits, right? And so this is what I kept thinking about, because when we go to Vegas, we love playing the slot machines.
Buffalo!
Just for fun. That's exactly what I thought about. was the Buffalo slot machines in Vegas. For some reason, we gravitate towards that one. It's just a lot of fun. It's got this, you know, so it's got a lot of lights and noises mm-hmm. and the buffaloes going by. And I don't know why that is just that. Something
just
about
that.
That's a great mind hack for us. Something about us that is that draws us into that Buffalo slot machine. And then while you're playing it, you're inevitably going to get up a little bit in money. Mm-hmm. And that's exciting. That's a dopamine hit.
Yeah.
And if you don't walk away at that point, if you don't walk away and you keep playing, you're invariably going to lose. Yeah. And that's the hack. That's the mind hack. Mm-hmm. That they draw you in with the lights and the sounds and the potential to win a lot of, hundreds of dollars, maybe something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. People win more, I guess, but I've never won more than $100 or something like that.
Yeah.
But they draw you in, and then you think you get up, and you're winning money, and you get that dopamine. You just want to keep going, and push it to the limit, and then you're inevitably going to lose, mm-hmm. and then you're trying to get it back, so you keep playing.
Yeah.
So it's a great hack. Yeah. It's a great mind hack, and we all know it's a hack, right? But we're still like drawn in to do it. Human systems, our human mind is very hackable, especially when you think in terms of elections and how we all participate for the most part in social media. And all the political parties are using social media. Mm-hmm. Wherever our human eyeballs are, the political parties are there trying to hack what we see and how we feel and what we believe.
And the algorithms like recognize what you click on and how long you click on it or how long you've been there, and then feed you more of that same stuff.
Yeah,
so then it validates our our biases, saying, right. Oh, well, clearly this is real because I'm getting lots and lots of information on this one thing.
Right.
So it validates our biases to that perspective, and it's totally unconscious.
Right.
So. Sorry.
Well,
yeah.
No, go ahead.
Yeah. So from a psychological standpoint, so it's like intentionally trying to go out and find different resources to challenge your assumptions and challenge your thinking is really the only way to recognize that that's happening to you.
Yes.
And intentionally trying to mitigate.
Right. Financially, same thing. There's a lot of financial hacks that he talks about in here. One of the interesting things was the hedge funds. So I've always wondered about hedge funds and why those are a thing, but those are actually a hack of the financial system because the hedge funds only cater to ultra high net worth individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the fact that they cater to only these high net worth individuals, they are not governed by the SEC. So the SEC does not have any oversight into how they invest.
Interesting.
And how they do things. And they do mostly shorting stocks or whatever. I don't know exactly how they all work, but they have more power to manipulate the financial system because they're not governed by the legal system.
Yeah.
That's in place to kind of make that more of a fair playing field. We've also talked about on this podcast high frequency trading. That's also another hack of financial systems, where these computer systems can make trades at the blink of an eye, whereas the humans who are clicking on a button to buy or sell something are it's a much slower transaction than what those computers behind the scenes can do, and that's how they're making profit based on how we're doing our transactions manually from a human perspective. Legal hacks. There's all kinds of legal hacks. I mean, there's just so wherever there's a system, there's a hack.
Yeah.
And it's just the nature of the game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also trying to read through, I can't even say this, Gerdel Escherbach, G-E-B. And it's just a very difficult book, but I wanted to talk about it briefly here because one of the things it talks about, Mr. Hofstadter, Dr. Hofstadter talks about in the early pages of the book are formal systems.
Mm.
And formal systems are basically systems with discrete rules that should be followed.
Mm-hmm.
And computers are great at following formal systems because they have discrete rules that they follow, and they will do it until the cows come home, and they don't care. They don't think about it. But humans, on the other hand, part of being intelligent and part of being conscious and aware is our ability to realize, hey, this formal system that I'm participating in doesn't make sense. I'm done. I'm out. Or, reading a book is, part of a system. If you get tired, then you just can put the book down. You shut it off. Shut off a TV as you're watching it or whatever. You have a means, in other words, of escaping a formal system.
Like in Friends, Joey reads a scary book, so he puts it in the freezer. Yeah, same thing. Put it down.
Yeah, exactly.
Take it up.
We have the ability to escape a system if we don't want to participate in it.
Yeah.
Whereas computers right now, they don't. They participate in the system, and they just keep participating in the system regardless of whether or not it makes sense or not. They're just programmed to do it. With the advent of artificial intelligence, however, now computer systems have that potential ability to realize whether or not a system makes sense and can break out of that, break out of system.
That's interesting.
So I just was thinking about that whole aspect of, being able to break out of a system, and that's part of the reason that the whole hacking thing has always appealed to me. Systems can be meant to empower certain people and give people power over a large majority of people who are participating in that system.
Mm-hmm.
So one potential hack that Shinier doesn't really mention is the ability to just not participate. We can say, hey, I don't want to participate in the system anymore. But that can be really, really hard. And so that hack may be, how can I not participate in the system anymore and still survive?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So the financial system that we're all party to can be very difficult to participate in. And maybe sometimes you don't want to play the game anymore.
Yeah.
But how can you survive if you don't participate in it? How can you survive if you don't go to the grocery stores anymore? How can you survive if you don't have a bank account anymore? It can be very, very difficult. So, in conclusion, I just want to say that for me, learning to hack, having a hacker's mind, has been very, very important, not just from a creativity perspective, but also a perspective of how can I think about breaking out of these systems? How can I think about, manipulating the rules of a system that might not be ultimately fair?
Yeah.
It's important to think like that because, as Shinier points out, the people that are putting systems in place and the people that are mostly breaking these systems to their favor are the wealthy and the powerful. And he talks about hacking as a parasitic activity that only benefits the few. So those systems that we are participating in, anytime you touch a computer and go online, you are being hacked. You are a target to be hacked. And so we have to be aware of that. And we have to start thinking like a hacker and how we ourselves can break out of those systems. Now, I don't want to be like...
Challenge our own assumptions about what's possible and
think. Yeah, and be aware of the systems that we're in and how we are being manipulated to participate in that system to the benefit of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think it's a valuable exercise to think about how you could break out of systems, especially with AI coming online. How can we defeat an oppressive artificial intelligence? We're always talking about Skynet. It's part of our mythology already. Like, these oppressive computers that, want to kill out humanity. Mm-hmm. How can we hack those systems? How can we hack drones? Like, if the government releases drones that are autonomous and they go out and start attacking humans, how can we attack these systems?
Yeah.
I think it's important for us to be able to think like that and in order to preserve our own freedom and stuff like that. So what?
Nothing.
What do you think about that when I say? Is that too crazy? Am I being too crazy?
No, it's very you.
I just think it's important. Maybe you don't. That's why I read this book.
Yeah, I think about it from a different perspective, like making sure that we have the ability to challenge our own assumptions and challenge the assumptions of others and challenge the assumption of the system, whatever that system is.
Yeah.
And so that we can think differently. So, for example, even like rules, your rules of the office, what does that look like? And what is... I challenge all the time. So what does that actually look like from a different perspective? What assumptions, what's being missed in that, those rules, and how can you leverage it to the best of your supervisor, your employees, and really still focusing on what's good, the best outcome for everybody.
Right.
Well, hacking,
I totally think there's an aspect of hacking for good. And when you talk about maybe the rules of the business aren't maximizing productivity. Maybe you have a different perspective on how those rules should be in place, or what the rules should be in order to further improve productivity.
Exactly.
And being able to think outside of the existing box of rules is important.
Yep.
So with that, we'll leave you with this episode, and we will see you next book. Thanks for watching.